You're listening to the Pocket Coven podcast,
where we explore the magical and mystical
and where they intersect with the wide world of mental health.
I'm Amber Lenore, a pagan creative arts therapist.
And I'm Callie Little, a pagan emotional support witch and artist.
We invite you to listen, connect, and deepen your relationship to magic.
And to yourself.
We're the coven in your pocket.
Hello, cousin.
My cousin Callie.
My cousin witch Amber.
Wherefore art thou, cousin witch Callie?
Did you know that that means why are you?
No, I had no idea.
Yeah. Wherefore art thou is why are you? And the context for that particular passage, you can really hear that I'm autistic here, is that, you know, it's wherefore art thou Romeo, right? And it's about like, why are you Romeo? Why couldn't you be literally anybody else? And Romeo is saying a rose by any other name would smell as sweet because, you know, their families are rivals. So it's about how, you know, she could be named anything and she would still be this beautiful Juliet.
So am I saying, why is it you that is my cousin? Why of all the friends is it you, Callie, that is my cousin?
I'd like to think of it as more, oh, why is it you? It's you, you know. Anyway, what a fun way to open our episode with a little bit of fucking William Shakespeare lore.
Of course, apropos of the topic.
This week, we're exploring the concept of sympathetic magic. But before we get into that, we are going to do our tarot pull. But this week, we're doing a little differently. Amber, you want to tell me about what deck we're using?
I am using the Threads of Fate. It is a deck that do not fuck around. I use it with clients. They always find it to be very heavy hitting.
Love that.
Very concise. It's this beautiful black deck with this gold leaf. So, Callie, I'm going to kind of flash you.
Beautiful. Part of the wild. Oh, flashing me.
So I'm going to pull a card for us. You know, I'm like just holding where we're both at. I'm really tired. You've worked a full day. I'm watching the sun go down. We're here to talk about sympathies between things and what that means. Oh, you? Okay.
I'm full of sympathy.
Yeah. The card I got says nature.
So, ooh, I love this card. Okay. It's a pine cone with three eyes going down the center. Very like a biblical angel. It has two wings coming out of the side. And then a halo that's in the shape of a crescent moon with all these little kind of beaming stars coming off of it.
Yeah. What a great card for this. Ooh, all of the celestial imagery combined with the pine cone imagery and the sympathy between the celestial plane and the physical plane.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I feel like, you know, with the context of the very biblical angel feeling image, that says to me, like, think about your true nature. Be not afraid of who you are at your core. And I, to go along with this, am going to pull another kind of divination. So this is a little package. It's like a matchbook of single-use fortunes. And on the cover is a little lantern, and it says, a well-lit path. The back reads, single-use fortunes to help light your path while you walk through life. And these are by a Seattle artist named Pam Wishbow, which all of that is spelled exactly how it sounds. And I also have an Oracle deck by her. I love her art. If you're very into like minimalism and mid-century art, highly recommended. So I'm going to tear, ooh, I'll do a little ASMR. I'll tear it in the microphone and we're going to see what our collective fortune is. So wherever you are, whenever you hear this episode, your fortune right this second is be not afraid of who you are and sleep on it.
Oh.
Yeah. Let me do that a little more ASMR-like, okay? So you heard the rip already. I can't rip it again, but Be not afraid of who you are. Sleep on it.
I love how, like, beautiful that is when you do it. And also, I keep imagining a horrifying biblical angel, and it's very menacing. Be not afraid. I'm afraid. Like, what are you?
I can't not be afraid. I'm so sorry, sir.
Yeah.
So what is sympathetic magic, Amber?
You know me, I'm going to crack out the Dictionary of Witchcraft, also known as a book called Witchcraft by the Library of Esoterica.
Hell yeah.
This is such a highly coveted item.
Oh, yeah. You know, we are going to be getting into a little bit of the delicious materialism of witchcraft, the good and the bad, just as like a little taster conversation over on Patreon after the episode. But I will say it took us months to get that book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so worth it.
So worth it. It's an excellent grimoire. It is very complete. And one of our former guests, Amanda Yates Garcia, penned one of the chapters on mythology and witchcraft. It's such a great book. You should grab it if you can. Mm-hmm. And for $40, like, it's a pretty good, it's a good steal. If you have to save up for that, I would. There is a chapter on sympathetic magic, and it says, sympathetic magic relies upon the theory of correspondences. Things that resemble each other will naturally and magically impact each other, sharing an essence that creates an unbreakable connection. The philosopher and mystic Emmanuel, let's try this, Swedenborg, was one of the first to introduce the theory of correspondences, which claimed that there were relationships between different levels of existence. For instance, body corresponded with spirit. That's what we got in that card, which is very cool, mm-hmm. and intention with action. In sympathetic magic, objects or rituals are used that are symbolically linked to the focus of intent, the subject, person, or event one hopes to influence. I could keep going, and maybe I'll bring some of this back, but so far, I feel like that essentially describes most magic. It's working with correspondences and symbolism and ritual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that that passage even notes that this is about, you know, the business of correspondences, because we talk a lot about correspondences on this show. I know that it's heavy in how you and I already practice. When that book came in the mail, finally, we were looking at it, and you had already taken a look because you actually gifted me my copy.
I did.
It's so precious to me. And you were like, oh, there's this whole thing about sympathetic magic. It's basically what we already do. And reading it was like, oh my God, yeah, we're sympathetic witches. Like, I know that for a while there was a really big internet boom of people being like, I'm this kind of witch. I'm a cosmic witch. I'm a moon witch. And all those quizzes, like, what kind of witch are you? Are you a green witch? Are you a hedge witch? And it turns out we're sympathetic witches.
Yeah, we are. And we also use sympathetic magic a bit differently than where sympathetic magic originated. It was a really foundational aspect of all folk magic and indigenous traditions. So here's another passage that I think is kind of interesting and kind of illustrates that differentiation between how maybe we're practicing and how people used to practice. Sympathetic magic also serves as the basis for most folk medicine. Plants perceived as resembling a body part, a heart or kidney, for instance, are believed to have the capacity to heal that part. The phallic-shaped daikon radish reputedly counteracts impotence, for instance. So then we get into the realm of poppets or voodoo dolls and Haitian religions. This represents that, or this resembles that. Thus, I can impact something that is like this. And that can be used for, like, baneful magic is another way to put that. But then, I mean, it starts to not really matter once you understand that most magical you know, workings and rituals all have commonality. Christianity yeah. uses sympathetic magic. There is an idea that prehistoric cave paintings were a form of sympathetic magic, that they would paint the hunt before they went on the hunt, believing that it would impact the hunt. This impacts that.
I love how simple that phrasing is. This impacts that. I mean, that is so much of what magic is in general. You know, the definition of it is change made in accordance with one's will, right?
Yep.
So witches, or anybody who practices magic, whatever terminology you like, we're all using sympathetic magic, even if it's just that, you know, before we started, I've had a really long work day. I've had a lot of sessions and my throat is pretty tired. I can feel the voice being lost. And so I put honey in my tea. And that could be considered sympathetic magic because honey is supposed to help sore throats, right? It's also, we could think about all the symbology there with bees. We could think about the fact that I'm a Virgo, which to me, I symbolize Virgo as the bee, the honeybee. And we could just go down this whole delicious spiral of symbology and connections. But the point is, sympathetic magic is about looking at our own intuition and seeing how we feel about things and trusting that to be true for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of what you're speaking to there with honey is this symbolic or representational way of divining different sympathies, if I should be so bold as to give it like a whole, like, ooh, you're doing that. And also sympathetic magic is, I am going to take this one herb or eat this one food because it looks like a mouth and that will help my sore throat. Right. So yeah. It starts to kind of break down. Honey also has different properties that helps a sore throat, not just because it represents or because it's symbolic. When all of those things work together, it's really nice. And those things often do work together. And I think that part of where that kind of approach can split off into magical thinking or superstition. An example of magical thinking is, I can make that building blow up over there if I just think about it enough, right? If I just like direct enough like thought energy, or maybe if I get a copy of that building, that would be sympathetic magic, and I take it home and I crush it enough times, that building will come down. Like, well, that's not really going to work. So I think over time, magicians and witches have started to use sympathetic magic less literally. I think that's what I'm trying to say. You know, I read some accounts of how different plants or herbs were used to cure like jaundice because they were yellow, but they didn't really actually have an impact on jaundice just because they were yellow. I think that a great use of sympathetic magic in a practical way and an embodied way is using it for self-reflection.
Yeah, I think what you are talking about is the desire to, you know, say like, oh my God, my crush texted me at 11:11. It's an angel number. It's meant to be. We are twin flames. It's an auspicious day and it's a full moon in my sun sign, so I know that today is the day that I'm going to get my promotion. Like, I mean, if we want to be working with sympathies, with correspondences in this way, that's like, this is affirming the way that I'm feeling, that's one thing. But saying, you know, if I leave a prayer to the goddess enough times that this chronic illness will leave my body, and then we don't do anything else, that's a problem. It's not at all a problem to pray for solutions. It's not at all a problem to petition whoever your deity is. But we also have to remember, you know, even in more traditional Christian religions, God helps those who help themselves, right? So even those traditions that are so steeped in, you know, really relying on your deity, even those say, but you have to work for it. You have to show that you're going to, you know, be part of this process too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It gives away too much power to say, yeah, I'm going to carry this blue stone in my pocket because it represents this idea and that's going to be sufficient. It just takes all of our efficacy out of the situation. So it's also, I just don't think, very helpful. And it I think, can also breed this mistrust of the self or mistrust of magic. Mm. I think that so much of sympathetic magic is reading correspondences in a very subtle way. A lot of magic, I would say most of magic, is not the big sensory ritual stuff. At least not in my world. If you're a ceremonial magician, I'm definitely speaking out of turn, but most of us just kind of, you know, work in non-healthy normals. have to have different ways of working magic into our regular lives. So being able to use sympathetic magic as a way of maybe considering what the world might be trying to tell me. I keep noticing this one symbol over and over. I wonder why I am noticing that.
Yeah.
And that's very different than like almost a vengeful God that's showing you something because there's something to be scared of.
Right.
I see that happen a lot, that reading correspondences can be anxiety provoking. What does this mean? What does this mean? Yeah. And also I find reading correspondences to be really exciting. It's really where I do most of my most magical work.
Yeah. I think anytime we're feeling afraid of the universe, we're getting off track.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, this is a fucking weird reality. This is a really wild experience that we're alive and in human bodies. But, you know, we're actually pretty unremarkable. We are all at once incredible, powerful, creation-based beings. And we can do so much. And also, we're pretty mundane. You can find us literally everywhere on the planet. So, you know, this life is both sacred and completely normal.
Right, right. And magic lives in the subtle realms. It lives through veils. It doesn't scream at you. It doesn't explode at you. It's not movies. It's not. There is so mm-hmm. much slowing down and grounding and like feeling into, wow, I'm going to say it, subtle energies.
God damn it. That's the name of your memoir. No, that's the name of your sex tape.
Subtle energies, how Amber lost any shred of credibility as a professional psychotherapist.
Well, you know, I think out of all of our episodes, this one actually has the most likelihood of really pissing some people off, honestly.
Really? Why do you think that is?
I think to point these things out might make some folks feel attacked. I think that might be a response because, you know, so much of the spiritual community is on that kind of the excited new relationship energy that goes along with becoming a spiritual being and being like, oh my God, love and light and I am magic and manifestation and 1111 angel numbers. Oh my God. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like that is part of our identities. All of us, we all feel magical and I feel God in this Chili's tonight, all of that. And you know, we can't not quote The Office ever. And also, sympathetic magic is, it's just not the only element. We also have to have those practical tools because, like you said, we can't give up our power. We can't say, like, I'm having trouble communicating, so I wear a lapis necklace and that's going to fix it. There's nothing wrong with saying, I'm struggling with communication, so I'm going to wear this lapis necklace. And every time I look in the mirror, I'm going to be reminded that I'm worthy of speaking up for, and that not only am I worthy of the energy of that, I'm worthy of spending the money it took to buy this necklace for myself. I'm worthy of looking at my value every single day. And maybe if I'm afraid of speaking up for myself in this work meeting, in my relationship with my parents, whoever, I can touch this and be reminded that even though it's hard, and it might feel really uncomfortable, I can do this thing. You know, there are really big differences between those two mindsets.
Oh, absolutely. A lapis is such a beautiful color and texture, and we need those helpers. We need stones and herbs and environment and therapists and tears. We need so much. Mm-hmm. I just don't believe in singularity. I believe in many, many things coming together. I've even had a client reflect something that I really loved, which is, you know, she came to the realization that, you know, therapy is a life-enhancing activity. It's not there to solve her problems. And that felt like really wonderful to hear, actually. It reminded me of what I'm there to do, because I often feel like I'm there to solve all the problems too. I want to.
Yeah.
That's a really human need, right? And being with other people is just not that. It's so much more complicated. Being with your lapis is not just wearing a necklace and waiting for things to happen. So, you know, people can be challenged by this episode. That's fine. The goal here really is that we want to be able to hold, at least my goal is to hold sympathetic magic and the reading of correspondences and the interpreting of what they mean in our lives in balance with the material realm and the spiritual realm, like all the other realms that would like to have a say in what happens too. There are some times that I think I know what a correspondence means, and as I wait and I watch, I see what the environment thinks about that. I see what my life thinks about that, what my relationships think about that. I need to kind of be this open channel, this like receptive thing. And if I see, you know, a certain animal over and over and I start to feel like that means one concrete thing, I become really anxious. So it's actually with care that we're trying to just add some nuance to this idea, because it deserves nuance.
Ain't that just the way? It's always about nuance with magic and with life. I think that for me, like the way that I'm relating to what you're saying is I'm thinking of when I have a tarot reading. Oh, I'll use an exact example from my life. So,
lay it on me, bitch.
I was in a therapy session with my amazing witch therapist. And at the time, this was quite a while ago, over a year ago, I was in a very new dating relationship with somebody, and I could sense it wasn't going well, but I was trying really hard to lie to myself about that. And I asked my therapist if they would pull a card for me, and they pulled the Eight of Cups, which all the tarot witches know is the breakup card. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, look into it if that's of interest, but my therapist was like, well, it's the Eight of Cups. You know, this is the card that really means breakups. And I was like, well, this must be about my work life. This is about something I'm doing in my job. And they were like, I mean, it's one of the cups. And I was like, yeah, but I'm really emotionally attached to my work. And I just was not willing to follow the actual correspondence. I just had to see that shit through for myself. I was being really stubborn about it. And like, that is also part of magic. You know, we do have to be stubborn sometimes. It's not that we should. It's that sometimes we just have to. And then getting through that, I was like, oh no, that card means breakups. That's what that means. So
yeah. We
don't always know right away. We do have to follow our gut, and then we have to learn. That's the part that I think really you and I are getting at is it's like, yes, you know, get that stone that makes you feel like you can speak up for yourself, but also learn from your experiences.
Yes, be receptive to other possibilities outside of yourself. You know, you don't also have to do everything alone. There's this entire system all around you trying to help you and support you. Or at least that's a belief that I hold that makes correspondence reading much safer for me, you know. And also, as I were talking, I'm kind of noticing that, you know, part of how we got to this point was the root system of sympathetic magic, which is in folk magic and indigenous cultures. And then, you know, we kind of went on and I gave an example about like jaundice and yellow things. And I think very easily that could break down into folk magic is bullshit or indigenous understanding is just superstition. And that's not what I mean at all. I think that for anxious Westerners who are learning about correspondences and don't have access to folk magic or indigenous magic in that way and don't know how to hold it in the same way, I think that it's us that benefit from trying to hold things with a little practicality, you know, and I think that's really also what we're talking about.
Yeah, I really appreciate the sensitivity to that because I had missed that possible oversight. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely not saying that if you follow a tradition of your culture that we're essentially speaking in opposition of. We're not saying you should abandon it or that it's wrong. We're literally just talking about from a mental health perspective and from our opinions combined, both of those things all at once. It's important to take ownership of your experience. And that could mean saying, fuck you, I'm going to eat this yellow flower to cure my jaundice. And that's the end of the story. Like, that is definitely you taking power over your experience.
Right. I could be totally wrong. You know, like I don't really get to be the expert on anyone else. Right. And also folk magic is incredibly powerful and effective. Yeah. I'm not a folk magician.
I'm sorry. Did you say you're not a folk magician? Because
a folk.
I know what you said, but it really sounded like folk magician. And I was like, Amber, yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Book two, Amber, fuck magicianry, how I became exiled from any psychological space ever.
Instead of a fuck boy, you're a fuck witch.
I mean, yeah, sure. If that's not really. I'm really not a fuck witch. Yeah, I'm a horny person, but I'm not a sex magician. That's for sure.
This episode is off the fucking rails. This is bananas.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think it might be interesting to just give some examples, maybe now that we've kind of tried to hold a bunch of really paradoxical truths the best we can, just trying not to fuck it up too bad, you know? In neo-paganism and like Wicca and like popular like witchcraft, there's some really common correspondences that you're going to see. And I think that might be kind of fun to talk about. What do you think?
Yeah, I love that. I don't know what examples you're going to pull, but you go ahead and get started and I'm sure I'll think of some.
Oh, totally. What if you were like, no, I think that's a really stupid fucking idea.
You know what corresponds to your ideas, Amber, is fucking dunce cones. That's what corresponds for me. No, you always have great ideas. I mean, I guess that can't be true, but you do often have good ideas, right?
I think I mostly have good ideas. Yeah. And sometimes I have some kind of weird ideas. Yeah. Yeah.
That can
be fun.
All
right. So I'm coming at you. I'm coming at you from learnreligions.com. I really like this website. I think it's really, really complete. So we got your crystals and gemstones. Crystals and gemstones. That's like so common. I got gemstones and crystals on my altar right now that represent all sorts of stuff.
Same.
Yeah. So, I mean, how is that helpful to witchcraft to have gemstones that correspond to different concepts? What do you think?
I think that there are so many ways for that to be helpful. There's the first one that stands out to me is aesthetically, it's pleasing. You know, when I'm looking at my little crystal collection, I do feel like my life reflects my belief system. I feel like looking at a snapshot of my home, you'd be like, that bitch is clearly a pagan. And I really like that. I also think that if we're buying crystals ethically, which I will admit I have not always done, and I still occasionally am just like, I just need to buy this little tumbled jasper from the local shop. But if we're doing it mindfully, then we're celebrating the earth. If we're doing it maybe not so mindfully, then we should really consider that. And is that reflecting our values as pagans?
I like those thoughts. And this is also a place where everyone gets to have their own relationship with these objects and their own personal yeah. correspondences to them. I really love gemstones, of course, for their aesthetic value. They're so beautiful. They're such yeah. nice friends to have around. They have personality. They're wonderful sensory objects. And everyone that listens to this podcast knows I'm a huge fan of concretization and mm-hmm. the symbolic representation of abstract feeling and thought, because it helps it become more embodied. You know, that's just kind of generally where I live with correspondence, is how can that be for the benefit of my system, or how can this be for the benefit of my self-understanding, which is much more of a divination process. Like, I find being a therapist to be a process of divining or finding sympathies between parts of the self or situations and feelings or goals and fears. It just kind of goes on endlessly. So I digress. We have herbs.
I think this is one of the most core elements to a lot of religions. A lot of religions have deep significance to certain herbs. Even, I keep saying even, but it's really because I grew up Christian and I think of it very much in opposition to a lot of my beliefs as far as society is concerned, whatever mm-hmm. that means. But even Christian religions, you know, frankincense and myrrh are these sacred herbs that are very steeped in the Bible. We have so many folk religions that celebrate, you know, burning different kinds of herbs, whether they're loose or herb bundles, because all of those things are tied to certain cultures. We have salves that can be used for anything from, you know, treating burns to getting witches high so they can hallucinate and masturbate with their broomsticks.
Of course, like we all do every month. Everyone take note and share.
If you weren't at our last full moon broom fuckathon, then you're clearly not.
Did you not know this was... You didn't know this was required? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. You're going to need to
You didn't
do
get that invite?
Shit. Oh, I'm
We sent
know, I'm
the owls out. I mean.
Also, a fax? Is anyone using fax anymore?
Only owls and fax.
It's the only way that we respond to anybody.
I mean, that and those singing telegrams. We do send those out on occasion. Just some barbershop quartet men show up and start being like, get on your broomsticks.
God, this fucking episode is so unhinged.
Unhinged correspondences.
Like, when I thought about it, I was like, ooh, yeah, it's going to be like this, like, gentle, magical. And we're just like, ah, like, it's great. It's great. I love it. We're just rolling with it. Then we got candles. We got candles, Callie. Candles. Which is, always use candles. They have colors. Colors correspond to what?
So many things. We've got color theory. We have, I mean, seasonal work. We have working with the wheel of the year. We have moods, you know. Color speaks to so much. And then also candles are symbolic of fire. They can be so powerfully used. They're so important to so many of us.
Yeah, exactly.
And they smell nice.
They're very accessible. They're usually pretty damn cheap. And you feel like a real live witch when you're using a candle, I notice. At least I do.
Same.
Flowers, plants, and places. All of those things can be enchanted for us.
I guess so. Yeah, like land, earth mm-hmm. stuff. I mean, place is so important. And human beings have assigned so much meaning to plants. We kind of already talked about that with the herbs, but, you know, the language of flowers is still a real thing. I use that in my tarot readings. I look a lot into how different plants are showing up in the cards. And of course, use them to treat things. I use them to infuse magical properties like rosemary and cinnamon. Anytime I'm like, ooh, I really need this magic to work fast, rosemary and cinnamon and that shit, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm growing lion's mane mushrooms, and they correspond to many things, including like rebirth processes and protection. And also lion's mane is incredibly good for your brain. So it's both a correspondent symbolically, and it's important to me, and it's really effective. So many of the plants that in folk medicine were understood to be curative because of their symbolism were. Mm-hmm. We have more understanding now of why. There's so much indigenous wisdom. I mean, just look at our mycelium episode with Maria Sabina, right?
Yes, yes, yes. Also, I would say lion's mane mushrooms correspond to the animal magic of lions.
They do. That's next on my list. Animals, which is big for me and you. Really fucking big.
Okay. Did you know? This is,
yes.
Did you know that February 27th was the one-year anniversary of us being eagles?
I didn't know.
I had a pop-up on my computer today with a little photo gallery of it. I'm going to be posting it on our Instagram, Pocket Coven Podcast.
Oh, my gosh. That was such a special moment.
It was. For those who are like, what the fuck are you talking about? You were eagles. we were not literally eagles. We were on one of our little day trips to get out of the city and just go enjoy the ocean on the Olympic Peninsula. And we were doing a meditation on the water. And we both had closed our eyes. We had set up a little altar with some tarot cards and crystals and things. And we had the same prompt going into this meditation. And it was that we were getting on a boat, I think, or there was a boat.
We were going to get on a boat and we were going to cross the water that was in front of us. And yeah. It arrives at another island. There's a network of islands in front of that spot.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we both had really beautiful experiences that were totally different from one another. But I, at one point, opened my eyes and I looked up and two eagles were flying right over our heads, like not super far high up in the sky. And I like tugged on you and you looked up while they were still flying over us. And they went and they landed on the top of a tree really close to us. And they stayed there the entire time we were on that beach.
Yeah, they were straight up hanging out.
And so eagles became one of our shared little family animals. We've got rabbits and we've got eagles. And I gave you a Labradorite eagle for Christmas, and I have one as well. I don't know. We became eagles a year ago. It's our eagle-versary.
We did. We have an eagle-versary. We have an owl-versary now, too.
Oh, right.
Right. The Great Horned Owl story is in there. There are deer, like me and Callie and animals is a whole fucking thing. The way that we have been using that in a sympathetic magic way is to notice that those eagles arrived, which for one thing feels kind of magical. What are the chances that these eagles, blah, blah. Well, you know, in some ways the chances are good. There's eagles' nests up there. You know what I mean? And in other ways, it felt really like, wow, I feel kind of chosen by this eagle right now. That feels really nice. And yeah. I can't really see anything all that harmful with feeling a relationship or a relationality to this eagle. That's really meaningful to us. Then we looked up what they represent. Freedom, independence, and sovereignty. And Callie and I were just, I think, a few months into the podcast and a few months into some of our creative projects. I then took that image and I did creative visualization with it, like me and Callie, like riding eagles over the peninsula, like, you know, just like celebrating our freedom. And it was really nice. You know, it really helped me sort of process what we were doing together. And then every time we see an eagle, it reminds us of that moment when we felt so magical and powerful together. It ripples out and creates this web of meaning that is life enhancing and affirming and connecting me to the natural world. And that's my favorite use of sympathetic magic.
Yeah, I agree. It's about finding the magic in the world and in life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And If it totally works for someone to put a chunk of rose quartz in front of their house because it represents love and to wait for someone to come love them, I am completely, totally willing to buy that that has worked for some people. It just hasn't worked for me. So yeah. I try different things, you know?
Yeah, we are definitely not saying it's wrong to do that. We're just saying
right.
Be aware of your expectations. And be aware of your power in creating the life that you desire. Those things may or may not follow our personal practices. That doesn't matter. This isn't about us. You know, your spiritual path is not about anyone except you, even if it is about honoring ancestors, honoring your family, honoring the land that you're on. It's still also all centered around you, your spiritual practices around you. So what role do you want to take in that? That's something you can be really aware of. And whether you are choosing to really take the reins of your experience, or you're saying, you know what, my belief system is handing this over, as long as you're aware of it, then you do have power.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. You know, and the next thing on this list is numbers, which brings us to angel numbers. And I'm just going to be transparent with my angel number stuff. I feel so self-conscious about it. This 111 stuff is so persistent. And I understand like the cognitive processes whereby we notice numbers, but that doesn't reduce the spooky feeling. And a witch that I work with professionally, as in I am their client. I am client in the situation, and that witch takes care of me, which is very nice. I have several witches that take care of me at this point. And that witch suggested that, you know, your guides would like to help you. So you should probably let them help. And in fact, you might want to ask them for help. And I'm not even sure what I think about guides really. And I'm not sure what I think about angel numbers really, but I keep noticing things, and I think it's a radical choice for a survivor of abuse to say, I need help, rather that be to nothing, to a guide who might be paying attention, or to a loved one. It's very difficult for me to say to a live person, I need help. So by imagining that there are people with me, which could be understood as my ancestors on another plane or angels or creative imagination or play, whatever, so many ways to understand that process, I say to them, I need help. And I say to myself, I need help. And that gives voice to a part of me that needs help and needs to be seen needing help. It needs to be okay that I need help. As I do that, I stop seeing the angel numbers as much. So the witch's take is that is your guides pointing and saying, hey, I need you to pay attention and I need you to announce this. What do you want? What do you want from me?
And from a psychological standpoint, when you voice that part of yourself, you're also alerting the part of yourself that is that equipped adult, like, hey, it's time for us to go to work here. So even if we're calling in, you know, our loved ones who have died or who we've never met, even if we're asking our energetic allies to be there, we're also saying to ourselves, what can I do to alleviate this challenge in my life? And that's also important.
Yeah, absolutely important. You know, and I think maybe I'm realizing as we're talking and processing, part of what's satisfying to me about integrating psychology with magic is I have a way of checking in and making sure I'm safe. And not all psychology is safe. I want to be really clear about that. Yeah. Psychology can be an incredibly dark kind of magic, incredibly baneful magic that hurts a lot of people. And there are different kinds of psychology or, you know, therapeutic modalities that help us really emphasize the role of safety. We try to model that here by saying things like, hey, we might be wrong, because that's giving power back to you. You're allowed to make your own choices and to kind of hold people in sovereignty. But man, I could go so hard on that, but I want to make sure that I say the last two, which is elements and the moon. Those are the big, like the biggest correspondences I work with other than animals. I'm so grandiose. I'm like, this is the biggest thing.
It's the moon.
The moon and the elements, earth, air, fire, water, to the seasons, to the wheel of the year. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, elemental magic, lunar magic, also the sun. I feel like if we're going to, you know, give some love to the moon, don't forget about the sun. It's there too. All of these things are really ancient. These are all things our ancestors, no matter where we come from, paid attention to the weather and the sky. Yes. This is a human experience, and we are all guests on this planet. So that is something we all have in common, and it's incredibly meaningful. The cycle of life, as reflected by the seasons, it's so beautiful to remember that, you know, yeah, the leaves fall off the trees every year, and then it's really dark and it's really cold, and then the flowers come back. They always do.
They always do. Yeah. It's so life enhancing to notice the seasons and to notice the moon and to bask in the sun, which I did quite a bit of this weekend. The sun was out, which was so luxurious, and it felt so warm. It's such a sensory experience. Our bodies read it so well. It speaks a language that we don't even have words for, but needs to be spoken. So yeah, I feel really rooted there in the, yeah, and the sympathetic magic for sure.
Well, I know that we had said we were going to keep this episode short because you're exhausted, my throat's exhausted, and here we are, 47 minutes in.
This is us being short.
We're really good at being concise. But one thing I want to make sure we notice is Carly Cravens and A Witch and a Woodsman, who are our two goddess tier patrons. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And thank you to all of our patrons at every single level. You know, because of you, we're able to do things like have experiences, going to the beach. You know, it gives us a little bit of support instead of just us pouring our time and money and energy into this. We get a little bit back, and it really does make a huge difference. So thank you. And if you want to join our Patreon, you will get, I mean, this is episode 56, so you're going to get like 60 pieces of free content. If you join at the book tier or above, you get even more, including our private second podcast, Self as Myth. And if you want to give us a little bit of that tangible love, but you don't want to do it with money, a really great way to support our work and to let us know that this is impacting you is to rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or hey, you really want me to fall in love with you? Rate and review us on both.
That's where the sex magic comes in. Just kidding.
And other than that, we are going to go over on Patreon now, and we're going to have our little extended content for patrons be all about buying shit as a witch. And I'm going to do an unboxing of goddess provisions because Amber and I both subscribe. She just opened hers today. I haven't opened mine, so I have no spoilers yet. And we're going to let you know what we think about it. It's not an ad. We're not saying you should go buy it, and we're not saying you shouldn't. We're just going to give our genuine thoughts on this and spending money on stuff as a witch.
Yeah. Hell yeah. It'll probably be funny.
Probably will. We're usually goddess, hilarious.
Goddess Provisions didn't pay us, so I have no responsibility to hype that stuff at all.
Exactly. But Goddess Provisions, we would be more than happy to talk about the things we love about you if you ever want to sponsor us. So just let us know.
Oh yeah. Good note there, Callie. So I mean, like we say in our family, wherefore art thou, cousin? Blessed be thy pheeps.
Blessed be thy pheeps. Keep those brooms up. Look out for the owls that we're sending your way. There will be a rave in the woods.
And the facts. Don't forget the facts.
And if you are the winner of the giveaway, you will receive a singing telegram from four naked Baphomets.
Callie, you shouldn't have. That's a great idea. You're such a baby genius.
I know. I'm sorry to spoil your birthday gift, but that's what I'm getting you.
All right. The brooms are up. We got to go.
Bye.